The Jacksonville Jaguars' first preseason action of 2018 is in the books after a 24-20 loss to the New Orleans Saints, and we are here to recap that game and give you all the analysis that we have. Welcome back to the Locked On Jaguars podcast. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Be sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, as well as my trusted co-host, Misto Christofo Thorntown, Chris Thornton. How you doing, buddy?
You know, I could be better. My last name could be Throckmaker, so.
We're not going to talk about that on air. But that's a draft prospect for this year that has probably the most interesting name that I've ever seen of a prospect ever. But we'll go ahead and get into it. But before we do that, be sure to throw the Locked On Jaguars Twitter handle a follow as well. Subscribe, rate, and review on wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, all that jazz. And be sure to bookmark the LockedOnJaguars.com page. So the New Orleans Saints, dare I say it, came marching in last night. And despite the final score, despite that there is technically a one in the L column for the Jaguars right now in the preseason, I'd say the Jaguars did exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah, the first team offense came out, orchestrated a beautiful 79-yard drive, and capped it with a Blake
15 plays, 79 yards, and 7 minutes chewed off the clock.
I mean, it was pretty beautifully orchestrated. There's really only, three or four plays that resulted in nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And the only fault I really saw out there was on the play where there seemed to be a miscommunication between Bortles and Fournette, where they bumped into each other on a handoff. And Fournette still took that for, 5 yards? Mm-hmm. he made it to the outside. We saw his speed. Considering his loss of weight, I think that he did look a little faster, especially on that play, being able to make it outside and cut up and gain positive yardage on what normally would have gone for a loss of yards. So it was an impressive play. That throw from Blake to Didi to get them in the red zone, that 16-yard pitch and catch, was a damn good ball, considering the pressure that was on Bortles as well.
Especially with Bortles not even having his full starting offensive line. I believe he only had two actual starters out there, and Linder and Robinson. And then you had, Shatley, Reed, and Wells, or something like that.
Reed on the starting team? I thought it was Can. I thought they were missing two. Regardless, they were still missing at least four.
Yeah, Can might have been out there. So three out of the five starters.
Mm-hmm. They just didn't want to push, according to Maroon's press conference, push Parnell because he was dealing with a small injury. I can't remember exactly what it was. It might have been his shoulder, but they didn't want to push him at his age, especially when he's only getting 12 to 15 reps. Norwell had some tightness in his calf before the game, so they didn't want to push him either. It's a precautionary move. It was a smart, right thing to do. So they went out there, and they were still able to move the ball just as well without them, so it ended up being totally fine.
And then, really, the only mishap that Bortles seemed to have was a slightly underthrown ball to Marquise Lee that was almost beautifully one-handed intercepted in the back of the end zone. But defender couldn't get that ball, so the drive was able to live on.
Exactly, and it wasn't the worst throw, especially considering what the defender had to do to try and go get that ball. So at the end of the day, I can't really complain about it too much. But then I said before the game that I actually thought Jacksonville would win this game based on their depth alone, considering I figured the second team would have the majority of the snaps, which they did. They played through half of the first quarter all the way to the fourth. And their second stream team, someone said it to me yesterday pretty perfectly, that this team's second string could be a bottom tier starting roster in the NFL. And that's pretty impressive, quite honestly. And I think they look the part. Cody Kessler appears to be a pretty good backup for Blake Bortles. He fits what they want to do. He's consistent. He went 14-17, had a couple of nice throws. Some receivers were out there making plays with the second team. Shane Wynn, Rashad Green had a couple of catches, but he also had the muffed punt later on in the game. DJ Chark, I think, brought in a catch where he had a lot of yards after the catch, which was pretty great to see. Corey Grant was even involved in the receiving game with the second team a little bit. So all in all, we really saw what we needed to see out of the offense in the first and second team.
Yeah, Kessler showed what he kind of flashed in Cleveland and then what he's done all in training camp. Not turn the ball over, complete a lot of passes, and kind of just move the offense. And I think, I felt that he locked up that number two job weeks ago. But I think even after last night, I think you can just cement Kessler in at the two for quarterback on the quarterback roster.
We'll talk more about the quarterback rosters coming up in our third segment today because we want to talk about the other guy. But just a little look into the defense as well. They actually kind of appeared rusty in comparison to the offense last night.
Yeah, they kind of got chewed up a little bit by Tom Savage, former Texans quarterback. Granted, almost the entire starting defensive line didn't seem to be out there, or at least I'll say Campbell and who was it? Campbell, Bryan, Smoot.
Campbell, Bryan, and Smoot, the 1-2-3 at 5 tech defensive end, were all out. So the starting left defensive end was Hunter Dimmick.
And then I just feel like defense isn't ever going to go as hard in preseason as offense is, which leads to kind of these high scoring preseason games. But Jalen let up, I believe it was it against Thomas? A decently long reception, but I think Jalen was arguing that Thomas pushed off, and I thought he pushed off as well, but I'm just taking the defensive performance with a grain of salt because we know how great they can be. I was really focused on how the offense would do, and they performed beautifully.
Yeah, exactly, and at the end of the day, it's all we really needed to see. No one expects any regression, really, from this defense, so I'm not concerned about it. I don't think they really got pushed much, and especially when you're missing, like, not only big presence in Calais Campbell, but also a first-round pick who's his backup, and then a guy that's a solid rotational defensive end in that guy's backup. Like, you're starting your fourth-string big defensive end there. Even if it's only one position, that's certainly going to make an impact on how you play.
Yeah, that's always going to kind of hurt, losing your first, second, and third string on an edge. But nonetheless, I think they still did pretty well. Really, that drive was kind of aided by penalties. You had the phantom
illegal hands to the face.
Was it that drive or the next drive that Payne got the?
That was the next drive.
Next drive, okay. So really, the phantom hands to the face kind of kept that drive going, and then it was just really short to intermediate routes. But man, Miles Jack looked good in coverage last night. He had a
pass. Leon. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say he had a pass breakup. Was able to stop, I believe, was it Kamara that he stopped on third down to force a field goal, or was it somebody else?
Yeah, it was Kamara.
Yeah, he looked damn good. If you're able to keep up with Kamara, then you're probably going to keep up with almost every running back in the league.
And then we can also talk about Leon Jacobs and his first preseason action as the Jaguars' Sam linebacker, and he seems to have this job down. He was able to create pressure off the edge. He made a nice run stop against, I think it was Mark Ingram at one point. All in all, like, he doesn't get that many snaps. He's probably still taking about 30 to 40% of them at that position, but he was able to make an impact while he was on the field.
Yeah, he had a few good run stops. I can't say I really watched him whole. I watched him whole. Did he have a special teams tackle?
He might.
I wasn't sure if I saw him. I know that DJ Chark had a really good special teams tackle. That was good to see because I was just kind of talking to some guys around me in the stand, and we were like, it's nice to see that even your second-round picks are putting it all out there on special teams, which really kind of screams Maroon's kind of earned your spot on this team regime.
Exactly. Well, that'll about do it for our game recap. When we come back, we're going to be talking about our three players of the game, and then after that, a little look into the bottom of the quarterback depth chart. So three players of the game. We'll keep this nice and quick, talk about who we really liked. Chris, who you got?
All right, so I think the number one star for the night, or the best player. I can never remember if it's three stars for the best or one star. But anyway, my number one guy for the night is quarterback Cody Kessler. Kessler came in, kind of commanded his second string offense, moved the ball really well, and really just kind of cemented himself as the number two on this Jags roster.
I definitely agree. I have Cody there as well. I don't know if we'll even have too much shakeup. in these lists, but I thought Cody looked really sharp in control of the offense with the second team. He's going to end up being a perfect backup plan for Bortles going forward. Not that we really need to worry about that, because Bortles has missed one snap since he first ever took the field as the Jaguars quarterback, and it just so happened to be on a Chad Henne kneel down. So I'm not concerned. But if that time does come, knock on wood, we have Cody Kessler, and he seems to be in control of what they want to do on offense.
If Kessler continues to perform for the rest of the preseason, could the Jaguars maybe flip him from that conditional seventh round to something a little more valuable? Could be something to look forward to in the future if he continues to have like strong preseasons while he's on the Jags roster.
I understand that. I do, and I think that's like plausible. Like, it's something they probably could make happen. At the same time, they haven't really had a backup quarterback like worth keeping around until this point. So just in case, yeah, you know, keeping your fingers crossed.
I mean, that Brandon Allen guy was kind of a scrub. So
hey, we don't talk about him like that. I still have a hole in my heart from when he left.
It would have been nice to have Brandon Allen last night instead of He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Until a later segment. My second player of the game will have to be Dede Westbrook. He came out with a first-team offense when they announced that Keelan Cole would not be playing, and he looked the part. I truly think he is going to be Allen Hurns' replacement as the possession guy, as the guy that has a decent route tree, is able to make an impact in the middle of the field. He's a guy you can trust when you're trying to convert a first down. That one play, the pitch and catch with him and Bortles, where he made a diving catch, to get into the red zone, it was a 16-yard reception, as well as two other catches. He averaged 10.7 yards per catch. I think his growth, I don't really know how much room he has to grow at this point, because it's still unclear as to exactly what he could be. When the team drafted him, they thought deep threat because of his, like, what, 4.4 speed or whatever, or something like that. He was real fast in his combine speed. But they're trying to mold him into this possession-style receiver, like the short-to-intermediate routes. I mean, he was dynamic. During training camp and preseason, I've got him charted down at 5 in routes, like in the short-to-intermediate part of the field, so crossers, that kind of stuff. And he seems to be picking up really well, and I think he's a guy that you can trust to convert. He had a good performance last night, and I think he'll continue to do so going forward.
Yeah, I would say probably Westbrook was my number two as well. Could he be a really good asset in PPR fantasy this season? We have a guy that can write that up later on. But, I think Westbrook's probably having one of the best off seasons for any Jags player on this roster. Last year, missed 8 games with an abdomen injury, came in, kind of flashed a little bit, didn't really produce a whole lot. Had that touchdown catch in the Seahawks game and just some miscellaneous stuff here and there. But then this offseason, he said he was able to really learn the playbook. Kind of felt like he knows way more about this offense coming into his second year. And then just all through camp, seems to be just making play after play. I wanted to tweet it out, but I know it's Mike's thing. He had a diving catch last night in the preseason game, so diving Dede. That's kind of been Mike's brand and Dede's brand this camp. A lot of diving catches across the middle, which, I mean, is fine. If that's where the ball has to be for you to get it, nobody else. But I would say Dede's definitely climbing the step chart, because I would say last year I was skeptical if he would even make the roster with all the additions that they were making. So it's good to see him grow. It's good to see that the fourth round pick that they used on him might be a better investment than it might have looked at the end of last year.
Definitely. Now, for the third part on the list, I know who I've got. I've actually got two guys at the same position, so I'm going to cheat a little bit. But Chris, who do you have?
That's a tough one. I wish this guy would have got more reps. I want to say Logan Cook as a wild card, because that first punt he had was pretty damn good, which a lot of hang time, sort of, was what, just under 60 yards, 59?
It went 56.
And then... But the hang time was what led to Shark being able to tackle the runner almost immediately as soon as he caught it. So, but he only really had, two or three punts? So, this is a tough one. I'm trying to think of somebody else who stood out. I'll say Logan Cook for now, and if I get a better answer, I'll come back.
You know what? I wasn't going to pick Logan Cook, but he's a guy that I would certainly give an honorable mention to because of that punt. He was only given two punts during the game, and people were legitimately calling for him to get a chance to punt more because they just wanted to see him in action. They were actually saying to, like, I heard it kind of a joke in the media room, like, oh, can the second team and third team, like, actually be forced to punt for once so we can watch this dude? But, so he'd be an honorable mention for me. I've got two guys at the cornerback position that I think both deserve a mention, one being Trey Herndon. I saw people saying that he kind of got eaten up, and I didn't see that too much last night, but he led the team in tackles with 6 solo, 7 in total. One was a tackle for loss, and he came down and made a really nice play in coverage when he was kind of covering the flats area on a Ted Ginn Jr. reception across the middle. He came and tried to cut up field, but Herndon was able to make a nice stop for only a gain of 3. And Ted Ginn is one of, maybe not as much anymore as he's gotten a little older, but always been a pretty fast receiver. Obviously formerly used as a punt returner. He's a pretty fast dude, and Herndon came down and clicked and closed very quickly on the play before Ginn could even make a cut up field. And I thought that was impressive. I thought he looked okay in coverage. He's got room to grow. He's an undrafted dude, so he's got some work to do, but I was impressed with what we saw out of him last night. And then another corner would be Tyler Patman. He's been working his way into battling for the nickel corner role. He started camp in place of Jalen Ramsey when Ramsey was attending the birth of his child. He had a sack. They had him playing nickel and ran a nickel blitz a la Aaron Colvin from the past years when he would be used to blitz off the edge as the nickel corner. But I thought he had a good game making that stop on a sack. He had 2 tackles in total. I want to see him more in coverage. Want to see if he can keep working to this nickel role. He had the sack going for the tackle for loss, 2 total tackles, but I was impressed with that. If you can get that out of your nickel guy when his priority is covering the flats when he's in coverage, if you can also make a presence beyond the line of scrimmage, then I'd say you got a pretty good guy there.
Yeah, I can get behind those. I can get behind those two guys. Herndon kind of flashed. He had that tackle that would have prevented the guy from scoring a touchdown out of the two.
Yeah.
And then was it Herndon that almost laid somebody out?
I don't remember that one.
Somebody else. I know Yannick laid somebody out.
Yeah.
In a play, but Herndon made a few plays that kind of caught my eye. That does jog my memory. And then, yeah, what you said on Patman's pretty accurate. He seemed to be pretty good on kind of like the edges and blitzing, but I wanted to see him more on coverage. Kind of, I don't know if I want to see him in nickel or on the outside, but because we know that Patman can play outside because he played in the Buffalo Bills playoff game and kind of held his ground. So, but yeah, seeing more reps from those guys would definitely be interesting because that is kind of a 3 or 4-way stop. Or a 3 or 4-way fight kind of for some cornerback spots. Quentin Meeks almost had a really impressive interception last night. But other than that, I didn't really see a whole lot from Meeks.
Right. All right, well, that should just about do it on our players of the game. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the not player of the game in quarterback Tanner Lee, as well as a little message on the continued national anthem protest as it was seen last night in Jacksonville. So before we get to kind of the off-the-field-ish stuff about the anthem, we're just going to do a quick recap on Tanner Lee. Chris, is there like one word we can use to really describe what we saw out of him in comparison to the two other quarterbacks?
I want to just kind of just go Stephen A. Smith here and just be like, bamboozled, abysmal, bad, horrible, hoodwinked.
It wasn't good. It was definitely unlike what we saw earlier through the first 3 quarters of the game, like complete other end of the spectrum.
It was kind of like what we used to see in past Jaguars preseason games where as the game went on, the third strings got better and more fun to watch. But with an actual good team, it kind of went how it goes now where the first string is the best. Then the second kind of makes plays and they're like, oh, these guys might make a roster, and the third string was abysmal. It's kind of like if the graph or play was a cliff, you would have kind of steady, 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 and then a drop into the abyss. And that abyss is known as Tanner Lee. So I was sitting behind all of Tanner Lee's family and friends, and they didn't have a whole lot to cheer about.
Yeah, I agree. The way I look at it is, someone actually said this to me during training camp. They said, you know, this first team, it's legit. This second team is really very well built, and as another person put it to me, is that they think it could be a low-tier starting roster in the NFL. But this third team is like, they didn't know what they were putting together. They just kind of threw poop at the wall and hoped it stuck. And the leader of that, I think, would be Tanner Lee. Lee was a guy they drafted in the sixth round because of arm strength and potential to move around, but he really had no pocket presence. His first two snaps as a Jaguar were both sacks. He had a fumble, almost two more fumbles. They call it was on his last drive. He had two more fumbles on top of the one he had earlier, but both of them got called back. One was called dead early, a la Miles Jack. And another one, I think there was a penalty on. So at the end of it, they just didn't end up giving the Saints that ball. But he went 4 for 8, a lot of overthrows, which is what we've seen in camp. It just wasn't good.
He managed to overthrow Alan Lazard, who, if you don't know, is like 6'6". So
yeah, he's a big dude. And he's also got a pretty big vertical. He can go up and get the ball.
So. Yeah, like Lazard was full extension, full like probably jumping, and he still managed to overthrow the man. That's like,
it wasn't good.
It's like 7 feet that you're working with, and Tanner Lee probably put it at like 7'1".
I don't know if there are any other backup quarterbacks that are worth like a third string or practice squad spot that this team can bring in right now. So I do expect them to hold on to Lee until it comes time for official cuts to happen. But if there was anyone out there that's worth bringing in, I'd get on it.
I'm sure the team's probably already looking at contingency plans for the departure of Tanner Lee.
I hope so. I just wish they would have kept Brandon Allen. But that'll move us past Tanner Lee and into our final part of today's show. It's not going to be a long topic. It's not something that a lot of people care about, as seen by the Twitter timeline. But last night, a couple players did stay in the locker room during the national anthem. No member of the Jaguars team was seen kneeling on the sideline during the national anthem. However, who was it? Telvin, Jalen, Leonard, and I think there was one other player that stayed in the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, I would have not even noticed if it wasn't for DeRocco's tweet. I actually looked at the sideline to see if I could see anybody protesting, just to kind of just see. And either sideline, I didn't see anything. Didn't even bother to check to see if somebody stayed in the locker room, which I figured if they did, that's what they probably would do. And then DeRocco came out and said that Ramsey, Telvin, Fournette, who is the fourth?
That's what I'm trying to remember. I'll try and pull it up while we discuss this. But there were, I believe, four players in total that did stay in the locker room. But I was up in the box, and I was looking at the same time to see if anyone was. I didn't see anyone doing that. I didn't even realize until I saw the tweet coming out and saying that these players did stay in the locker room. I'm still getting that pulled up right now. Jalen Ramsey, Leonard Fournette, Telvin Smith, and TJ Yeldon. They did not leave the locker room until after the anthem played. But it's not, well, it is about that. That's the idea behind the protesting has been so lost by the controversy that people have made up, saying that this is about the anthem, that this is about the military, when it's not. And these people know that it's not. So it's not even worth arguing about, but it's fake controversy because that's not the message behind this thing, and people just want it to be. But it's more so the idea that people kept saying, this isn't worth talking about, let's just shut up, let's not report on it and move on, and the media is being annoying about this. And, you know, think what you want about the protests, but at the end of the day, like, the media's job is to cover things related to the football team, on-the-field performance, news off the field, stuff like this. And my message is, as long as this stuff is happening, it's going to be reported on. And especially considering the President of the United States is continuing to voice what he wants to voice on this. And he did that this morning. He sent more tweets about how players will be suspended without pay, when that's literally not anything he can control whatsoever. So as long as it's a relevant topic, which it will continue to be, it's going to be reported on. If you don't like it, feel free to unfollow any member of the media that talks about it, or you might as well stop watching, because I don't think this is going away for a long time.
Which is unfortunate, because I think really most people don't care.
Well, the thing is at this point is, like, I get not caring, and, like, I get people wanting this to go away, but as long as the message is being misconstrued and the president feels the need to weigh in on something he doesn't really understand, this is going to keep happening, because the message has, like, the idea that it should just be, like, hushed up and no one should talk about it is exactly why they're doing this. Like, if there was any level of respect for at least, like, hey, they're protesting, I don't agree with it, but they're protesting, I'm just going to ignore it, it'll go away much quicker than, you know, moaning and complaining as to why people are doing it and that no one cares and everyone should shut up about it. Just, if you don't like it, ignore it. It's that simple.
If you want a friendly tip, you can just mute some keywords on Twitter. That's what I did this morning.
That or unfollow at this point. It's not the end of the world to see one tweet about what these players are doing. If you don't like it, you don't have to follow along. But that's pretty much my message on it. I could have blacked out drunk taking a shot every time I saw a tweet last night about why are they reporting on this? Why is the media so stupid? Like, it's not the media being stupid. It's just our job to report on things relevant to the team. But I figure that'll pretty much do it. little political action message there at the end on top of what was a pretty good Jaguars preseason opener. Don't pay attention to the WL column. Just pay attention to the fact that the first and second team did a pretty good job. And that'll just about do it for us. So be sure to follow myself on Twitter at @Zach_Goodall. Unless you don't want to see that news about the anthem, because as long as it happens, there will be a report, even if it's a retweet. Or also follow Misto Cristofo. He's muted those words. You don't have to worry about it from him. The Locked On Jaguars handle. Be sure to throw us a subscription anywhere you're listening to this podcast. And be sure to bookmark the LockedOnJaguars.com page. And we will catch up with you guys later.